on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Orient Hour on Phoenix 98 FM. I'm in the studio, and I'm Trevor Singfield. With me in the studio is Lee Boyce. How are you tonight, Lee?
Yeah, hello, Trev. Yeah, all good, thanks.
That's very good indeed. And hopefully, by the magic of the telephone, we should have Steve Tongue there. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Trevor. Hello, Lee. Hello, Orient supporters, wherever you may be. And hope you're not too despondent after that rather disappointing performance against Warsaw on Monday. We're going to take a considered look in this programme at where we stand now with just the 7 games left in the league, and we'll do so in the esteemed company of the Orient legend, that is Mr. Peter Kitchen. Now, you may remember or not that right at the start of lockdown, almost exactly a year ago now, Peter did a fascinating hour-long interview with Andy Gilson, which we put out as an Orient Hour Extra. That covered the whole of Peter's career with all his clubs, and it's still available to listen to. You just have to Google Peter Kitchen Orient Hour or Peter Kitchen Phoenix FM. So what we thought we'd do this time was concentrate on more current issues. We'll come back later live to Trevor and Lee, of course, in the studio. But let's hear straight away from our special guest. Only 10 players in Orient history have ever scored more goals for the club than Peter Kitchen, despite the fact that his two spells playing for us were comparatively short, barely a couple of years each. He still watches every game. And yesterday, Lee and I spoke to him by the modern miracle of Zoom.
Well, Peter, welcome to the Orient Hour. Delighted to have you with us. And when we say how are you these days to anyone, we have to mean it, really, don't we? How is your health and fitness, and how has your lockdown year been?
I'm very good. I'm still keeping fit, doing a lot of cycling, waiting for my second vaccine, and then I feel a little bit safer. But generally, I'm okay, yeah.
That's good to hear. And you're very much in touch with the O's. So how do you sum up the season so far?
It's been a roller coaster of a season. It's certainly been eventful. I think that's the best way to describe it, as a roller coaster, because it's changed so much during the course of the season from, you know, the start when we had Ross as the interim manager, then the appointment of Carl, then the sacking within a month, then Ross back in for a while, then made the permanent manager, and the results have basically followed that same pattern, you know. But I think we look like we've turned a corner at the moment, and I think it's evolving, you know, the situation's evolving, and I think we are getting better as a team.
And what about that recent managerial change? What did you think of Ross being replaced by Joby?
Well, I don't think Ross should ever have been, personally. I think he's a smashing lad, and he's probably a very good youth coach. Personally, I don't think he was up to the job. I know that might sound a bit controversial, but, you know, I did say over several months that the lack of a playing career would always be a disadvantage to him. And there were times when he needed to see things that someone with experience or insight could see, and he never saw that. And, you know, there was a reluctance to adapt and to change. And, you know, to his credit, he stuck at it, and he gave his lot to the club. And, you know, I think you can't criticise him in that respect. but I don't personally think he should have been given the job on a permanent basis. But, you know, perhaps it was always going to happen like that anyway. You know, maybe they just, the owners wanted to see how he would do, always with a view that if Joby was looking to go into management, then perhaps at the end of the season it might have happened anyway. But it happened sooner because results, you know, they went downhill very quickly.
Lee, over to you.
Yeah, I'm not going to turn this into a Ross v. Joby debate sort of thing. I know, like, some of the fans are going to accuse us of that, as they have been doing, Steve. But, Peter, I mean, when you say, like, Ross's lack of playing experience, like, obviously, there's none, but isn't that the way football's going a lot these days, where coaches are coming through, they've not actually played at a high level, they've played at a level, but it's more about the technical side rather than the coaching side, the manager side. How do you see that?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, anyone can basically put on a coaching session. Anyone can become a coach. And, you know, you can go and do your various badges, but their coaching drills, their coaching sessions, without actually having a feel for what's going on the pitch. And I'd say that in the modern game, it's very, very tactical, in a sense that, you know, there is an obsession with systems and playing a certain way. But fundamentally, you've got to look at individual players, to look at their strengths and to look at their weaknesses, and to try and adapt a system to fit the players you have, because at the moment, you know, a lot of clubs don't have the resources to go out and say, you know, we need a big centre forward or we need an experienced centre half, you know, because with experience comes a much higher cost. You know, you have to go and get someone who's played 400 games, 500 games, you know, a 15, 16-year career with character and all the right qualities, you know, they're going to come in, they're not going to accept the sort of salaries that we're paying. So it's a very, very complex discussion, shall I say, you know. But and as I agree with you, I don't think we should say Ross v. Joby at all. I think that Ross was holding the fort and basically set it up and doing the coaching. But in order to take the club forward, you need someone whether that has got the vision, that can adapt and to take it forward, and to understand what's needed, you would need the sort of playing experience that Joby has got. Whether he's the right man for the job, you know, that still remains to be seen. You know, I've seen it improving. I've seen a lot of things I quite like, but from my eyes, and that's not to say I'm right, I'm just saying from my eyes and from my playing experience, what I've learned, there is still an awful lot of changes that can be made to improve the setup. You know, I mean, if I'd have gone into management when I finished playing football, you know, I would have been hopeless. I know that. I can look back and say, but when you're in the coalface of playing, It's sometimes hard to see the wood for the trees. And actually, you know, I went from playing to having a job outside of football, but still coaching I was coaching at Wimbledon, I was playing regularly vets football. And then I had a very senior management job in a company managing 300 staff. And the amount of knowledge that I picked up there gave me all the sort of experience I need to do the job properly. And to just go in at 35, 40 years old without that, I think would be incredibly difficult. So, you know, it's quite a lottery being a football manager.
I mean, like, of course, I understand, agree with everything you said there, but there's a lot of players with, I mean, like I said, Joby's an icon. He's an iconic player. He's our most international capped player for Leighton Orient. Captain, promotion captain, everything. He's done it all. I mean, what do you see in him that you think could be the right sort of manager to take us forward, apart from obviously the games he's played?
I mean, first of all, let me just say one other thing on that, is that having a playing experience, having a playing career, doesn't guarantee you're going to be a good manager. You know, I've played with a lot of people that have played a long time, and I've had a lot of managers that played at top clubs, and they weren't good managers at all. And I think there is a distinct difference between a coach and a manager. And it comes down to understanding what makes individual people tick and how to get the best out of them and how to put them into a framework that will get people to gel, get the balance right. And that requires a lot of insight. And I think that Joby, he's got that insight. He's a very intelligent lad. I coached him for 4 years at Wimbledon as an under 13 up to under 15, under 16. And he's an intelligent lad. He listened. He wasn't one of the big mouths. You know, you get the cocky little kid who thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread. He was a very quiet, unassuming kid. Never was loud or anything. He just listened. I've met his parents. They're intelligent people. And I just think he's got the right, the right credentials to do a good job, to be the right person. I've still got reservations because, you know, so far he's played the set as a system where he hasn't changed it. And I know I'm rambling on a bit here. Sorry if I am, but, you know, when you play with a system is only a framework. You know, it's not the be-all and end-all. Whether you play 4-4-2, 4-2-4, 4-3-3, three at the back, five in midfield, it's a framework, and it's like a default position. So when you lose the ball, you can revert back to your shape. So you can, you know, get behind the ball, revert to a shape. And any system has to come with the right mental attitude. And I'll use one example, if I can, to try and explain that, is that if you say we're going to play with three centre-backs and we're going to play with five in midfield and two up front, and you say, right, you know, we've got three at the back, strong in the middle, we've got five in midfield, and we can get forward and, you know, go down, get the wide people going down and that. But if as the manager, you don't present a positive attitude to that and say, you know, every time you get the ball, I want you knocking it over the top and I want you flying down the wing. If you don't project that positivity, the three at the back becomes five at the back, because people's natural caution makes them drop back. So, and if you have a manager and players pick up on it, players pick up on the attitude of the manager, they pick up on that you're cautious, that you're negative, that you're playing with fear, or you're a bit fearful, and you're trying not to lose rather than go out and win. That's picked up by the players. So that three at the back becomes five at the back, and you then, you know, you're dropping back. So that, what I'm saying is the system is just a framework, and it has to be the mental attitude, the positivity that goes with it to get the best from any system.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Ross, like when he was, I could get what Ross was trying to do. Whether he didn't have like the right mindset, you were saying just there about the positivity, whether he didn't have the right players, but we never attacked quick enough. It was like, I was speaking to someone the other day on Twitter and saying about statistics, they could be manipulated that all these Optus statistics that come out with there can be manipulated any way you want, sort of thing.
Oh, definitely, yes. That's...
Yeah, we kept hold of the ball a lot, but never broke quick enough. And I understood the keeping hold of the ball, like around the back, playing out from the back, but we never broke quick enough. Under Joby now, it seems to be more direct, get it forwards. But then I've got a few stats, we had more shots and on target and off target in the last nine games of Ross's spell than we did in the first nine games of Joby. Now, like I said, I'm not making this a Ross v. Joby for anyone that wants to jump on the bandwagon. But if we wasn't attacking quick enough, which I think we can all agree we wasn't, how do we end up having more shots in them last nine games?
Well, I can't answer that without looking at the stats. But what I would say is that when Ross was playing, that caution I was talking about, players will take the easy option. You know, as a young pro, I can remember a manager I had called Maurice Setters, who played at Manchester United, Coventry. He was an animal, basically. You went over the top every Saturday. It was like going to war.
Jack Charlton's number two, weren't he?
Pardon?
Was he Jack Charlton's number two?
Yeah. And he was like, he had us running around the race course 4 days a week, and Saturday it came to the match and you went out there and you had to go and die in the game. You know, that was the minimum requirement. The thing about it is that when you are, as a player, he used to be saying to you, you've got to take individual responsibility to do something with the ball. Don't just make the easy pass. You know, anybody can do that. When you get the ball, go and commit somebody. And even if you don't have to dribble by them, but you have to commit to them and you pass it and you do, it's knock and go. So that you're always committing people. Now, for the whole of most of the period under Ross, we were just, it was square, and there was no looking forward. The first look as a player should be to look forward, because space only happens for short periods, and you've got to try and get in behind defenders to make things happen. And what was happening, we were just going square, and yes, we'd get a shot in, but they're in the wrong areas. You could have 10 shots from just around outside the box, but you might only get one cross in the box and get someone to get on the end of it and you'll score a goal. But, it's hard to define. But all I was saying was too many players don't take responsibility to do something with the ball. And I don't know if you see it on the Premier League, but the number of times, centre-halves play the ball to their fullback and get it back and play it again there. And none of them are looking forward because no one wants to be seen to be giving it away or whatever,
Yeah.
And I think that they're the sort of underlying things which underpin our team plays. As a manager, I would want my players to go out and have a go to get forward, because if you don't take responsibility, if you don't make anything happen, you won't know how good your players are. Well, ever you sit back and you allow them to just play it simple, you're never gonna put the opposition under pressure, and you don't know how good your own players are going to be because you're protecting them all the time. So, I was saying this to my wife earlier on that, football is such a multi-layered game. It should be played simply, but it's a very multi-layered thing. It's not that simple, really. And there's so many other factors that come into it besides the actual passing and shooting and the obvious tangible things. There's a big psychological element in football which no one can quantify.
Peter, let's stay on that theme of attacking, because as a former striker, I'm sure you look with particular interest at Danny Johnson. And I wonder, do you ever look at him and think what a player he might be with a Joe Mayo or a Keith Houghton type alongside him that you had?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a natural goal scorer who knows he's got the positional sense that you need. So, you know, you can be anywhere in and around the box, but you always know where the goal is. And that, you know, when that you get that instinctive bit of space, you can turn and knock it, you know. And he's got that. And what I can't understand is why someone who looks, you know, to be quite a good player is at 27, I think he is, and he's never really made it. He's never really played for any period of time anywhere. And, you know, it doesn't seem like he's got an attitude problem or anything. So I find that quite a strange thing. And I'd like welcome a chat with Danny one day, you know, if I ever got a chance to just, you know, find out a little bit about his career and you know, managers he played for and that, because what a lot of managers do is they look at what you don't do as a striker, not what you do. And I had that all my career. I was constantly in conflict with managers because they wanted you to be here, there and everywhere except where you know you're going to get the chances. And you know, I mean, without going into too much detail, I used to, you know, get to the point where I would go out there and play my way and not play always the way I was being told to play, shall I say. And I never, that doesn't mean to say I didn't work hard, because when you're up front, you're constantly moving, trying to find space, you're trying to run in behind defenders, you go out and try and close the fullbacks down. But, you know, it's no good me chasing back 40 yards and then the ball gets knocked forward and there's no one there to hold it, you know. And I think one of the big problems we have is we don't hold the ball up front to allow the team to push up and join us. And I think that's what Macaulay Bond did very well a couple of years ago, you know. And I think one of the reasons for the success of the team a couple of years ago was that we had a player that could hold the ball up front, and you had a wide player who could take people on. And, you know, at the moment, we don't seem to be, we need more options up front, personally.
But what I was getting at was, would we not have better options and more options with, say, a Connor Wilkinson, who, like Macaulay Bond, was going to win more in the air? I mean, Danny Johnson is not going to win balls in the air, is he? So if we're playing more direct and getting the ball up there quicker, more and more we're seeing the long balls from the back, it's not going to stick, is it?
No, I agree entirely. I mean, I think that, as I was saying earlier about systems, I think if for Joby to develop himself, he needs to be brave enough to try different systems. That may not be the right time at the moment, because every game is crucial and you need to get maximum points if you want to get to the playoffs. So, but as soon as there's no chance of us getting to the playoff, I think we should be playing two central strikers, and we should be playing two wide people and squeezing up and playing much further forward. And I think if we do that, we'll have much better movement up front, you know, people that can run along the line, hold the ball up and link the team up. You know, I don't know. I think often at the moment, and certainly on against Walsall, we had James Brophy, who was very much off his game, shall I say. But I think that was because they closed the space down and didn't allow him the space to run at them. And I think Connor's wide on the right, and I think they're all isolated. And Danny's, you know, looking to get the ball, but they're playing as three individual players far too wide. They're not close together. I mean, one of the things that Joe and I used to do, we used to play together in drills. You know, we would play at one coming short, one going over the top, so that we were always had an option of one going in behind, one coming short, one attacking the near post, one holding back and coming onto the far post, you know. And by doing that, you get a lot more movement and you can move their centre-backs about. At the moment, it must be so much easier for them to stop us playing in the final third because they're seen as in front of them all the time. You know, so I think Joby, going back to Lee's earlier, sorry, I can ramble when I get onto football.
You talk as much as you like, Peter. You talk as much as you like.
No, what Lee was saying earlier about Ross and that, I don't think players were taking responsibility as much as they should. And I think some of that was because Ross didn't command the respect of a lot of the players that Joby will. And I think they're more likely to listen to what Joby's saying than they were with Ross. And, you know, that I think that's been one of the significant things, is that there's a togetherness again about the players. We had a little bit when we had a couple of wins, but it quickly dissipated, shall I say.
Just one more from me on that, about the change in the dressing room when a new man comes in. Of course, you famously, having been signed by George Pecci, you had, two league games and I think two league cup games with him, and suddenly he was sacked and a new man came in. What's the effect on the dressing room when there is a change in manager?
Well, it depends on why the manager was sacked and the run of results that you're having. It was very unsettling for me personally, because I'd just signed. I'd taken several years to get away from Doncaster. They kept pricing me out of the market all the time, and I finally got a move to a championship club. And George, I like George. He personally seemed the right fit for me as a person. You know, he was softly spoken, but very, very knowledgeable as an ex-player and as a coach. And suddenly, you know, after two games, he was sacked, and you know, suddenly we've got a new manager. Now, the game that got George sacked was a freak result. You know, we lost 4-1 at home to Blackpool. And there's no way we were 4-1, you know, worse off. But anyway, that was history. But, I mean, the great example at the moment is Mick McCarthy at Cardiff, one of my ex-clubs. And I'm in touch with a lot of ex-people there and some fans on Facebook and that. And obviously, Neil Harris wasn't getting the best out of them, out of the players. And Mick McCarthy came in, and Mick's a no-nonsense manager. You know, he's a blunt Yorkshireman. You can tell how he speaks. You know, it's black and white with Mick. And I think the players were afraid of him at first. And he got them motivated, he got them fired up, and they had this amazing run. But the reality is that players can only sustain that for a certain length of time if they're not good enough. And I don't think Mick, longer term, will be the right person for that. He's not the person that's going to set, you know, have the youth team coming through and and developing it longer term, you know. And so managers can have a distinct difference. Going back to Maurice Setters, who he was at Doncaster, and we were struggling near the bottom of the old fourth division. And we were, you know, nobody was playing. We weren't playing football. We were just running and chasing. And he got sacked, and Stan Anderson came in as the manager. Now, Stan had played for Middlesbrough, Newcastle, Sunderland. He was a very quietly spoken manager. And every training session was with the ball. And we won six on the trot. So suddenly all these players that could actually play were finally starting to play and pass the ball around. So it's a fascinating example in that sometimes it can have a fantastic effect, and other times it doesn't change if the person coming in isn't able to change the mindset and the way that the team are playing.
I mean, we all love the stories of the old Neil Warnock, like Mick McCarthy, the old shouters and screamers in the changing rooms, and hearing the stories of teacups flying about. But I think modern day football isn't so much about that now, is it, in the changing rooms? It's more deep thinking, it's more talking, motivational speaking, things like that, isn't it? I mean, like you said, the Mick McCarthy's are only good for so long.
Well, it is, but having said that, Neil Warnock did the same at Cardiff. He came in and took a very average second division side, turned them around and got them promotion to the Premiership. Mm. And Mick McCarthy's done the same, and Neil's gone to Middlesbrough and done the same there. So I think it's got just as much a part as the technical speaking and everything. You know, players need to know what their jobs are. They need to understand, and it needs to be made simple for them to do their job. You know, if you give players too much information, they won't remember half of it. You know, I can remember some managers saying to players, you know, look, stop diving in. Every time you go out on that pitch, you know, you're diving in and selling yourself. So just go in and calm down and stop. And as soon as that player was on the pitch, it all went out of his head. And the first time he got, you know, he'd go in and whack somebody and get sent off, you know. And I think that's the mindset. Players need simple direction, and to keep it as simple as possible. And I think however you get that message over, that will come down to the individual style of the managers.
Okay. Looking forward, Peter, to, well, like I said, I don't know what the manager's going to be next season at the moment, but with the playing staff, I mean, we've just signed young Hector, he's signed a new deal. We've got Dan Kemp, who's looked very good for the most part. Who would you like to see stay out of this squad? Because the majority of them are all out of contract. Who do you think would be a good influence for us to sign and build on for next season?
Well, I think there's the basis of a good squad. I think throughout the season, I mean, I've said that I don't think we've been getting the best out of the players we've got. And there were times when we should have kicked on, and I don't think we were brave enough. And I think that of all the players we've got, we have got the nucleus of a good side. We do need some addition. I don't know whether we'll be able to keep Akinola, for instance. You know, I think that there's definitely a good partnership there between Akinola and Turley. And how Jamie Turley wasn't in the team, I don't know. I can't understand why. Because he looks so solid, he looks dependable. And Joe Widdowson coming in, you know, he's not an overlapping fullback, but he certainly is got pace, and he can, you know, he's not a bad a bad fullback, which allows James Brophy to get forward and do the things that he's best at. So I think they need. I would go for another striker, either try Connor Wilkinson up front. I'm not sure is that type of player. You know, he likes to be a bit wider, but you know, I would like to see him and Danny trying to form a partnership to see whether that would work. If not, then maybe we need to look to bring in another striker, a bigger striker, somebody that's going to give us a presence, because there is definitely a lack of somebody who's going to put himself about up front in the box, you know?
One quick one from me, just quickly. Soturio, Will Soturio, how do you see him? Do you see him as a long-term replacement for Johnson?
No. Okay. I think he's, you know, I don't like criticising players at all, but I think he's still a young player. He's got a lot to learn, and I don't see him putting himself about enough when he's played. But that could be because of, they're playing with the three strikers up front, and as I've said, I think they're very much isolated. You know, occasionally, I mean, on the Mansfield game or the Oldham game, I thought Dan Kemp was linking up brilliantly with James Brophy, and we were creating an awful lot from there. But because Walsall pushed us back the other day, Kempy was doing a lot of his work too deep, so Brophy was isolated. So we weren't linking up as a team, shall I say? So I think Rule might benefit from playing as a double striker. You know, I think that's got to be one of the options of getting the best out of the team and get them to link up better, is to have two strikers up front.
So are you thinking, Peter, with what, seven games left, that we are not quite a playoff team? Maybe this season we never quite were a playoff team?
I think there's everything to play for, because you look at the games that everyone's losing games, dropping points. So everybody can beat anyone else. And I think that, you know, with the right attitude, if we can go out and try and win these last few games, I think there's every chance we could get into the playoffs. I mean, 2 months ago, I would have said we haven't got a cat in hell's chance. But I think that there's enough inconsistency from other teams that if we can put four run wins together and we can, you know, carry on winning, there's no reason why we shouldn't, because we've got to play Cambridge at home, we've got to play Cheltenham away. You know, I think next Saturday will show how realistic our chances are, but I think we've got to try and at least keep going in that direction.
And that would make Salford away on the last day a very interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think that could be a real physical game. That one, you know, I think that's probably where we lack a little bit, a bit more physicality in our side. I think that's where we've seen the benefit of Jamie Turley at the back. You know, he is a very solid looking player, and I think, you know, with that strength. We need that strength up front. I think that with Dan Kemp and Craig Clay, Rule Soturio, we've got enough players in there to link up. James Brophy, I just think we need a little bit more strength, physical strength, because it's a tough league. It's a tough physical league.
Peter, great to talk to you. We're out of time, but thanks ever so much. Stay fit and healthy, and we'll keep in touch with your column online, and fingers crossed, as you say, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. I mean, I just, fingers crossed, we can get in the playoffs. be a great day out to Wembley again.
It would, wouldn't it? Well, there we are, Peter Kitchen in good form, even suggesting that we might still sneak into the playoffs. Although, of course, after we spoke yesterday, Carlisle had a home win, pushed us down to 10th place. We're 3 points behind the top seven now. Trevor, Lee in the studio, is it too much to do now for us?
In my opinion, probably is, being an old head. My son thinks differently, of course, because every time a goal went in Saturday, he's telling me where we are and the permutations. But we've got 7 games to go. Obviously, after Saturday at 5 p.m, we're going to know a lot more after the Cheltenham game. But the little bit of research I've done on it, with the games remaining, we have to play 4 sides in the top half, including the top two, 3 in the bottom half, including 2 in a relegation battle, and 2 of them games involve playoff wannabes. So the one dead rubber game would be versus Harrogate, because they're not going to go up nor down. So yeah, I think it's a tough call. I probably think we're finished where we are, to be perfectly honest, because I think I want us to make the playoffs, don't get me wrong, but I think one defeat, and I think could very, very dishearten the squad whatsoever, because if one of the teams near us, I think even Newport, win their game in hand, because the 2 above us and the 2 below us have both got games in hand. Complicated, isn't it? But if one of them get maximum points, then we're sort of needing to rely on the team to lose 2, and we've got to win 2 to get above them. A lot of permutations, but it's a very, very tall order, and experience tells me we're probably just fall short, sadly.
Yes, if you do the maths, the number of points required for the playoffs in our league over the last 6 years, I think, is about 72 on average, and we have 57. So really, you'd say 15 points from 7 games as a starter, which is 5 wins, really, from 7 games, isn't it? And bearing in mind our goal difference isn't good at the moment, as well as, you say, other teams with game in hand. Lee, it's a big ask, isn't it?
It is a big ask. I mean, like we've all said, and we all know, Cheltenham's going to be absolutely massive on Saturday. But I think if you're going for that sort of playoffs, you want to be playing teams that have got something to play for, rather than teams that are just mid-table. It puts a lot more emphasis on the game for both teams. It's going to open up the games a lot more, give us more chances. So, I mean, like I said, Joby was brought in with a target of getting us in the playoffs. We're still round about, so I think, yeah, as long as we get a good result Saturday, the momentum could carry us on.
Yeah, let's look at Cheltenham a little bit later, but it would be frustrating to miss out, wouldn't it? Because has it been a poor league? I mean, at least it's a very inconsistent league, isn't it, just looking at the results?
Well, yeah, it is an inconsistent league, but I think one of the consistents has been sort of Cheltenham and Cambridge have been up there all season. I mean, your Tranmere and Bolton have come from nowhere, so by putting good runs together, and it looks like Forest Green are having a wobble. So if we can keep some consistency, then we got half a chance, of course. But is it a poor league? I don't really know, because some of the games are played in strange circumstances, and the players, it's the same for both sides. If you're walking out from a change room in a porter cabin, home or away. So I've not seen enough of the other teams to actually sort of say, is it a poor league, to be honest, Steve?
Fair enough. Well, let's look back at the last couple, which many listeners will have watched, of course. Mansfield away turned out surprisingly well, especially, of course, for Dan Johnson, who got his goals at last. We were without Connor Wilkinson, injured, so we went back really to that standard 4-3-3 with Cisse, Clay and Joby as the middle three. Lee, what do we think of that formation? Normally means Joby playing, whereas the 4-2-3-1, which should really be a bit more attacking, it puts Dan Kemp in the number 10 role. But, of course, that normally means Joby doesn't start. And do we then miss something?
We was talking a little while ago, me and Trev, about Joby, like about him playing in the actual middle. I mean, this is the first season he's played in the middle for us. He's always played out wide. So you think to yourself, like, why couldn't he actually move back out to the left, like, sort of thing, and give us something a bit more composure, sort of coming inside. I think Kemp's a must. He's got to be playing in as much of a free role as possible.
Yeah. Well, that Mansfield game showed us what you can do also with only 36% possession, which, were, funnily enough, was exactly the same figure as at Newport when we won, just to hark back to what you were talking to Peter about the possession and the slow build-up. But having built up our hopes and got Dan Johnson back on the score sheet at last, put us just 1 point from the playoffs after Mansfield. We went into the home game with Walsall, who sat lower in the table than what looked quite a poor Mansfield side. And Joby's verdict on the goalless draw was lacklustre and flat, which I suppose included himself in that. He did have a little runner sub with Louis Dennis as well. Trevor, are we going to make any allowances for tiredness in that second game in 3 days?
No, they should have known that was coming along. We had good momentum. It was a poor display, which the previous manager would have got pelters for on social media. I guess the four wins Joby's gained has given him a little bit of leeway from the keyboard warriors, but it was a hard watch, and it was the blueprint for teams coming to the Orient, and they defended well, Walsall, and went man to man, sort of snuffed out Brophy further up the pitch, which obviously Lee would tell you that he prefers him coming from deep. We've had that conversation so many times. But yeah, it was a frustrating watch, and I mean, they had so many draws on before the game, Walsall, when you look at it, and you can see why it turned out to be a draw. I mean, we just huffed and puffed and couldn't break the door down, and yeah, I was really frustrated watching. I was getting pretty annoyed as the game was going on, to be honest.
I'm sure you weren't the only one. And I'm sure, too, some of our older listeners will remember Easters in the past, probably going back to the start of the 70s, when every team played Good Friday, Saturday, Monday, 3 and 4 days, and some of the Saturday games, 2 games in 2 days, I remember, were just terrible, let alone the Monday ones, when, of course, no substitutes or one sub at most, awful pitches. And watching the Walsall game, my mind did go back to some of those, and that was with a decent pitch on Monday. No shots on target for us, which was the same as against Stevenage in Joby's first home game. We might have got one on target, I suppose, in added time if Connor had stayed on his feet. The feeling from those who were right down by that incident, including our fellow Orient Hour presenter Glenn Wilkie, who was right down there behind him, was that he was clipped from behind. Lee, should he have gone down or kept going?
I think in the position he's in, if he can keep going, he should have kept going. I mean, I think I agree with like them boys that I thought he was, it was a touch, but whether it was enough for him to go down, when you look at the space he was running into, it's a, like I said, I mean, he sort of carried on running like as if he's going to fall in the penalty area. But I don't know, like I said, I just think like that time of the game and with the space he had, if he could have stayed up, I think he should have.
Yeah. And we're clearly playing more direct football, but as we were saying to Peter Kitchen, who was an expert at this, you've got to be able to hold on to the ball when it's not forward, haven't you? Are we missing out a bit on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's good to see DJ's in a bit better form, actually. He looks fitter now, doesn't he? And he's proven that by he's running the channels more. And he does try to hold it. I mean, he takes a good old battering, doesn't he, off any centre-halves. But, yeah, it's a good mix that sort of Joby's trying to get. And I did think that the pressing we put in at Mansfield, was excellent. The energy they did use up there, that away game, and obviously we've got another assist from a back pass, and that's down to the hard work of Kent Brophy up there helping out the DJ. And I think that is going to be the best form of defence going forward for the Cheltenham game Saturday. We really press them hard, and it's going to be a real tough game, that one, and that's, I hope, the approach we get with them players playing further up the park.
Which Walsall did to us, didn't they? They pressed us very well, and we were uncomfortable with it. One positive, I suppose, we ought to look for a positive or two, was the number of clean sheets. I mean, last season, I think, 36 league games, we managed 6 clean sheets. This time it's 17, isn't it, in 39? Who are we giving the credit to for those?
The keeper. Sure. I said from day one, even when I seen his debut at Stevenage, I think it was. The keeper's brilliant, apart from his way we're kicking occasionally, but no, he's not getting a lot of work to do, and what he gets in the end, he does really well. So it's a combination of all the defenders this year. Whoever's come in, to be honest, even under Ross, the defence was half decent, to be honest, whichever four or five players we have put out there, they've all put shifts in at the right time, whether it's Ling and Brophy, the fullbacks, Akinola, all been good. Hap, even Coulson's come in and done his job when needed to be. So overall, defensively, we have been good as a football club, but just it's getting the whole combination right, isn't it? And that's where we're two, three players short in the midfield and the forward line, to be honest.
Lee, I thought at one stage you had reservations about Jamie Turley. Is that right? And has he won you over now?
Not reservations. I think, like I said before, with Ross was playing a style where we played out from the back. That style don't suit Turley. Turley's, like I said on the show last week, he's an old school centre half, gets in, wins your tackles, gets it clear. Under Joby, that's the style we're playing. Get the ball up as quick as you can, lump it forward. Don't worry so much if it's coming straight back at you. Like, you know what I mean? Just clear your lines. And that suits Turley down at the ground. If we had another manager come in now and he decided he wanted to go playing football at the back, would Turley be in front of Happy and Tunji? No.
Yes, good point. Noticeable when Sam Ling, I don't know if you've ever seen, a number of times Sam Ling just gives the ball back to the right-sided centre-half, and with some of the others you mentioned, it would then go square across and out to the left-back and possibly back across again, and Turley just knocks it forward, doesn't he? Would you like to see him and Adam Thompson together, or are they too similar?
I think they're probably too similar.
Mm.
Both right-footers as well. Like I said, it all depends what style of football you're playing. Like I said, like the way we're playing at the moment with Joby, yeah, they'd probably work well. Just get in, win the ball and lump it forward sort of thing. But like I said, I don't think that's the style you can play long term if you're really going to progress.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting decision for the summer, isn't it? Talking about the system of traffic lights, which the management are apparently applying to players, are green for the ones they want to keep, and amber for the ones not sure about, and red is cheerio, off you go, I think. Has Turley got a green yet, Trevor, for you? Because he didn't have earlier, did he?
I would still be on an amber for me, personally. I'm with Lee a little bit of where he is as a player. He has come in. He's been the most positive thing that Joby's put in, to be honest, and come from nowhere. In my notes here, I think where Joby would have been training with him week in, week out, he may see something, and he was frozen out under Ross, and only Ross can tell us why he was frozen out from the team. And like Lee's explained, it's more to do with the passing out from the back, but he never made the bench either, which I found surprising. So, he's probably on an amber, but he's had a nice little golden part of his career at the O's at the moment, and he's stayed injury-free as well.
Yeah, and Joby very keen on his attitude. He's often praised his character and his attitude. Who else have you got green lights for, Trevor?
To be honest, I've not really thought about it.
We've got Hector, of course, haven't we, which I think we've all agreed was an important new signing, effectively, new two-year contract, which is great news.
Yeah, I think... four new players is probably the minimum requirement, but the decision does obviously go down to the management and the transfer committee. I think I'd like to see Wilkinson stay personally. I know some people don't like him, but I quite like Wilkinson, and like Peter said in the interview, if he did get a bit closer to the DJ, who obviously he's got to be on the green, hasn't he? You don't get goal scorers like that come along too often, and he knows where the net is. Then 50-50 on Clay, just looking at some of the players I've got seen. Cissé's got a contract, hasn't he?
Yep.
Anacola's not ours. So the fullbacks, would you change them both straight away? I don't dislike either of them, but that's down to the managers, really.
Lee, you know a bit about how West Ham work. I mean, Akinola is not a Premier League player yet, is he? Are they going to hang on to him?
No, they're not hanging on to him. As far as I know, what I've been told, he'll be a free agent in the summer. Whether he'll come to us or whether he'll be able to go Championship, First League One sort of thing, I don't know. I mean, personally, I think we should go all out to get him. I think in Vigourou, Brophy, Happy and Wilkinson, I think we need at least four of them five to sign, along with Hector, who's signed. But, as far as I'm aware, he's going to be released from West Ham in the summer. So, break, get him in.
Right. And a quick word about the next two trips then. Cheltenham, as we said, key game, and then Harrogate, who, of course, we've got quite a good record against last few years. What are the prospects, and what might the lineup be? Any changes required?
Probably carry on as we're going, but it's minimum 4 out of 6 if we're going to keep the playoff dream alive. So points Saturday, 3 at Harrogate will be sort of, well, whichever way it comes, we'd take. Like I say, bit of a high-press game in both of them. I think that would suit us away from home and make the mistakes come. And then if the DJ's on form and he's clinical, then we can do more smash and grabs.
Lee, it's quite a settled side, isn't it? Joby's not making many changes.
I think it goes back to Ross. There ain't many changes you can actually make. It's trying to keep everyone fit, everyone involved, and try and just keep momentum going.
Just the bench is a bit weak, though, Steve, isn't it, really? That's where the problem lies.
Yeah, yeah. OK, chaps, well done. Just before the end, one sad item we should mention before we finish. Too many of them this year, unfortunately, but we've lost Chris Robbins, the mayor of Waltham Forest and the former council leader, a great O's supporter who died very suddenly. He was still performing civic duties late last month, and our supporters club are sending a donation to Haven House, his chosen charity, in memory of him. So our sincere condolences to his family. So this Saturday, as we've said, Cheltenham away, streaming available, of course, at £10. Will it be the end of the playoff road, or could we get right back on course? Will they raise all our hopes again? As Peter Kitchen put it earlier, I suppose it's been a roller coaster. Our thanks to him. A reminder, the longer interview on his career is still available. Google Peter Kitchen Orient Hour. Thanks also to Lee and Trevor, to our producers this week, Andy and Billy, to Karen for making the podcast available, and to you, of course, for listening. Until next time, up the O's.
Stamford Bridge, this is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an Orient here. It's only a quid. Get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, 'cause it's a love to pop. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna wear rock and roll all over the world again. We had an F8 up 7, 78. We had John Sitter, that is most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. We had checkered shirts, we had Tate's hair. I remember the moment the Leeds Bill scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world. Till the end. If I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in God knows when. And I wanna hear rocking all over the world again. 'Cause this ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10.